Imagine a busy warehouse, forklifts zipping around, moving heavy loads. They're absolute workhorses.
Yeah, absolutely essential.
But here's something that might surprise you. A lot of the really bad accidents, like tip-overs, they don't always happen when someone's speeding.
No, quite often it's at low speeds.
Yeah.
During a turn, something seemingly routine.
Exactly. Which just shows these machines, well, they need more than just caution. They demand serious respect.
Profound respect, I'd say.
Okay, let's unpack this then. Today we're doing a deep dive into forklift safety. We're talking regulations, procedures, guidelines, advice, the whole lot. Now, you might be thinking forklift safety, really, but honestly, the principles here, preventing accidents, following the rules, making sure people go home safe, that stuff's universal.
And what's really interesting, I think, is how the legal side and the practical day-to-day stuff are so tightly connected, or at least they should be.
Right.
Every rule, every piece of advice, it's there for a reason, to stop something really bad from happening.
So our mission today is to kind of cut through all that dense information, give you a clear picture.
Yeah, a roadmap, what the law says, what you actually need to do, and maybe most importantly, why it all matters. So you feel informed, not, buried in paperwork.
That's a great way to put it, because this isn't just bureaucratic box ticking.
Not at all.
It's life and limb stuff,
Yeah.
seriously. If you ignore safety protocols with machines like these, the results can be devastating. So let's start there. What are the biggest dangers?
Well, the sources point to three main physical threats. And they're pretty grim if you think about them.
Okay.
First, there's getting crushed, between the forklift and a wall or racking or another vehicle. Tight spaces are danger zones. Second, simply being hit by a forklift, maybe one that's going too fast or the driver wasn't looking.
Right.
And third, being struck by the load itself. If it's not secured properly or it's unstable and it falls.
Wow. Yeah, those aren't abstract risks, are they? That's how people actually get hurt.
Precisely. These are the real-world consequences.
It really drives home the urgency.
Okay, so we know why safety matters in that fundamental sense, but beyond just avoiding injury, what are the other big reasons to follow the rules?
That's a really important question because it affects everything. There are four key reasons that stand out. First, and obviously most important, is reducing fatalities and injuries.
Yeah.
Accidents with heavy machinery happen way too often. The UK's Health and Safety Executive, the HSE, they estimate lift trucks are involved in something like one in every four workplace transport
One
accidents.
in four. That's huge.
It's staggering, isn't it? It just shows how critical proper training is. It's the number one factor in cutting down those numbers.
Definitely puts it in perspective. Complacency is just not an option.
Absolutely not. Then second, there's legal compliance. Simple as that. Having a safe workplace isn't just nice to have, it's the law.
And the penalties for not complying?
They can be severe. We'll get into the specifics, but fines, even prison time, it's serious business.
Okay.
Third is reduced downtime and material loss. Even a small bump can stop everything.
Right, like knocking over a pallet.
Exactly. Or damaging the goods or the racking. It causes delays, costs money. People might be off work. The sources mention things like, crashing into shelves, spilling hazardous stuff.
Or falling asleep at the wheel. I saw that mentioned.
Yeah, unbelievably, any of those things can bring operations to a grinding, expensive halt.
And the fourth reason.
This one's maybe a bit softer, but just as important. Happier workers.
How so?
Well, when a company shows it genuinely cares about safety, maybe investing cameras on the forklifts, or load sensors, or warning systems, it builds trust.
Ah, okay.
People feel safer, they feel valued. That boosts morale, makes for a better atmosphere, probably more productivity too. It's fundamental.
That makes total sense. It's about the culture, isn't it?
Exactly. Culture is huge.
So if those are the stakes, the why, how does the system actually enforce this? Let's get into the legal side. The UK framework sounds pretty robust.
It is, yeah. It's built on a few key pieces of legislation. At the very top, you've got the Health and Safety at Work Act 1974.
The big one.
That's the foundation. It basically puts the main responsibility on employers to keep everyone safe. Simple as that.
Okay.
Then, building on that, the Health and Safety Offenses Act 2008 really upped the ante on penalties.
How so?
We're talking fines up to £20,000 in a magistrate's court, or potentially unlimited fines in a crown court. Plus, prison time up to a year for magistrates, 2 years for Crown Court for serious breaches.
Unlimited fines and jail time. That certainly gets your attention.
It's meant to. And then there's the most serious consequence legally. the Corporate Manslaughter and Corporate Homicide Act 2007.
Right.
This means companies can face unlimited fines, and individual managers could face prison if their gross negligence leads to someone's death. It shows how seriously this is taken at the highest level.
It's a massive responsibility for managers and directors.
It absolutely is. Now, getting more specific to forklifts, there's LOLR, that's the Lifting Operations and Lifting Equipment Regulations 1998.
Oh.
This covers any lifting operation. It says things must be properly planned, supervised, carried out safely. And here's the key bit. By properly trained people.
The training requirement again. But you mentioned there isn't really a forklift license, like a driving license?
That's right. There's no single official government license you carry in your wallet. But OLA makes it clear. Formal, accredited training is mandatory. It's the employer's job to ensure that happens.
So the proof of competence comes from the training record, not a license card.
Exactly. It shifts the focus to the quality and documentation of the training itself.
Got it. What else?
Then there's PURES there. The provision and use of work equipment regulations. This is broader, covers all work equipment, definitely including forklift.
Fewer, okay.
It says equipment must be suitable, maintained, inspected, used correctly, and again, only by people with the right training.
Maintenance and inspection seem key there.
Hugely. And PURE has a very specific point about seatbelts on forklifts. Since 2002, operators must wear them.
Must wear them. But the source said that rule is often ignored.
Yeah, it's flagged as quite commonly flouted. Which is worrying, because seatbelts are crucial in rollovers. It puts a direct responsibility on employers to enforce that rule.
Just a simple click, but makes a massive difference. It's incredible it gets missed.
It is. Human factors, complacency, it creeps in. Just a couple more quick legal points.
Sure.
Red diesel regulations from 2003 restrict its use. You generally need specific permission. And if you do drive a forklift on a public road,
which sometimes happens, right? Crossing between sites.
Exactly. Then DVLA rules apply. You need a standard driving license. The forklift might need modifications like lights and plates to be road legal.
Mm-hmm.
And you need warning signs. Pedestrian safety is paramount there.
Yeah, makes sense.
And finally, while it's not a strict legal must for off-road operators, following the DVLA driver's medical unit guidelines on fitness to drive, highly recommended. Just good practice for safety.
Okay, so pulling all that together, there's a really solid legal net designed to catch unsafe practices.
There is.
Ignoring it isn't just morally wrong. It's legally risky with potentially massive consequences. Understanding these rules is your first line of defense.
Couldn't agree more.
All right. So we've got the legal foundation laid out. Now let's shift gears. Let's talk about the practical stuff, the day-to-day things that actually keep people safe on the ground, where the rubber meets the road, so to speak.
Right. This is moving from the what the law says to the what you actually do. And number one, absolutely foundational, is train your staff.
We keep coming back to training.
Because it's everything.
Okay.
And not just a quick video. I mean, proper in-depth training, covering the procedures, the checks before you start, how to actually operate the machine safely, and then practice under supervision.
An untrained operator
is a massive liability, a huge risk to themselves and everyone around them.
I get that. But, you know, thinking about training, where does it sometimes go wrong, even if someone is certified?
That's a great point. Often it's the gap between the training course and the specific workplace. You know,
yeah.
The course might be great, but does it cover the unique blind spots in your warehouse, the specific types of loads you handle?
Ah, the real world application.
Exactly. That's why ongoing mentoring, on-the-job supervision after the initial training is so vital. We can touch on that more later.
Okay. So training first. What's next?
PPE, personal protective equipment. And this is the employer's responsibility to provide.
Right. What are we talking about specifically?
Things like high-vis jackets, so people can actually see the operator in the machine. Hard hats, obviously, for protection from falling objects. Steel toe-cap boots, essential for foot protection. And tight-fitting clothes.
Right, tight-fitting.
To avoid getting snagged on controls or moving parts. Loose clothing is a real hazard around machinery. Each piece of PPE has a clear purpose.
Got it. Train staff, provide PPE, then what?
Daily checks. Every operator before every shift needs to do a quick safety inspection.
Every single time?
Every single time. Should only take a few minutes, but it's critical.
What are they checking?
Basic but vital things. Is the ground level? Check the wheels, tire pressure, any obvious damage to the body? How are the hydraulics looking? Do the safety devices work? Mirrors okay? Seat adjusted right? Can they see all around 360 visibility?
Okay.
Clear out any rubbish from the cab. Check the lights, the horn, super important, steering, brakes, and is there a fire extinguisher?
That sounds like a lot, but broken down, it makes sense. You mentioned heim pressure earlier, though. Is that why checks get skipped?
Often, yeah. People think, oh, it was fine yesterday, or I'm in a rush. But that's where the safety culture comes in. Those few minutes aren't a delay. They're an investment in preventing a major incident. If anything's wrong, that forklift stays put.
Culture again. It seems to underpin everything.
It really does. And complementing those daily checks are the thorough professional inspections.
These aren't done by the operator.
No, these are the deep dives. Done regularly, maybe annually, or based on usage by qualified engineers, they'll check the brakes, steering, the mast, tires, all the critical systems in detail.
And if they find something?
Forklifts immediately taken out of service. No arguments. It gets fixed properly. And keeping detailed records of these inspections is vital too, for compliance, for tracking.
Okay. Daily checks by operators, thorough checks by pros. What about during operation?
Right. Operational awareness. This is huge. You need constant alertness.
What does that mean in practice?
Looking out for blind spots, obviously. Paying attention to signs, low doorways, ramps, areas where people aren't allowed. Keeping a safe distance from pedestrians or other vehicles. Using the horn, especially at corners or anywhere, visibility is limited.
You mentioned an anecdote earlier about someone nearly having an accident by not using the horn.
Yeah, exactly. Trying to save a few seconds. But it's those moments. Carelessness, distraction. The sources say it's a common cause of accidents. You just can't switch off.
It's not just about watching the forks. It's about everything else, too.
Absolutely. Which brings us to good visibility. The operator needs that 360-degree view. If something's blocking at the load, maybe dirt on the windows. Fix it before you move.
Makes sense. Wear your glasses if you need them too, right?
Definitely. And sometimes, with a really bulky load, driving in reverse might actually give you better visibility looking over your shoulder. Feels weird, but it can be safer.
Interesting. Okay, visibility covered. What about the load itself?
Load safely. This is critical for stability. Forks need to be fully under the load. Tilt it back slightly towards the mast. Keep the forks low when traveling.
Low forks for stability.
Yeah, lowers the center of gravity. Stack the load evenly across both forks. Use pallets properly. Use ropes or straps if needed to secure things. And the big one, never overload the forklift.
That seems obvious, but you mentioned temptation.
It happens. Know the machine's maximum weight capacity. It's written on it. Never exceed it, period. Mm. And watch out for low ceilings or overhead obstructions when lifting or stacking.
Okay. And I guess related to that is knowing the machine's limits generally.
Definitely. Capacity awareness. Know what your specific forklift can handle. And while we're on what not to carry, never carry extra people. Forklifts are for loads, not passengers.
Right. No giving mates a lift.
Absolutely not. Also, actively avoid hazards. Don't just react to them. Look for bumpy patches on the floor, loose stuff lying around, spills, slippery surfaces. Spot them. Avoid them. Don't try to power through.
Proactive avoidance. Got it. What about speed?
Drive at a safe speed.
Yeah.
Warehouses should have speed limits and they need to be enforced. And there are specific rules for ramps or inclines.
Oh, yeah. What are those?
Go forwards up a ramp, but travel in reverse going down.
Reverse going down. Why is that?
Helps keep the load stable and improves control. Always keep looking in the direction of travel. Stay away from the edges of the ramp and never, ever try to turn or change direction on the ramp itself. That's asking for a rollover.
Okay, that's very specific and crucial advice. And finally, after the job's done,
good post-task practices. Don't just dump it anywhere. Park it safely in its designated spot, lower the forks, apply the brake, turn it off. If you're handing over to someone else for the next shift, allow them time to do their own checks. Adjust the seat and mirrors. Don't rush the handover.
That's a really thorough list of the practical hands-on stuff. But you mentioned culture earlier. How do companies make sure this isn't just a list, but something that's actually lived and breathed?
Great question. It moves beyond individual actions to the whole system.
Mm-hmm.
And a cornerstone of that is having a clear, comprehensive forklift safety policy.
What should be in that policy?
Well, it needs to cover the key things we've discussed. Enforce speed limits with stated penalties,
mm-hmm.
mandatory training as a requirement to operate. Clear PPE rules stating the employer will provide it.
So it sets expectations clearly.
Exactly. It should mandate those daily inspections. Outline rules for minimizing hazards. And importantly, address operator integrity.
Yep.
Strict rules about fatigue or intoxication. If an operator is clearly too tired to be safe, send them home. If they're suspected of being under the influence, immediate suspension. Zero tolerance.
Right. Non-negotiable.
Absolutely. The policy, reinforces seatbelt use, mandates those professional inspections, gives clear guidelines on loading, and crucially, it should state that unqualified staff must not attempt repairs. Forklift maintenance is for qualified pros only.
No trying to fix it yourself to save time.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
Shortcuts lead to accidents.
So you've got the policy. How do you keep it front of mind?
Regular forklift safety meetings or briefings are really effective. Keep them short and focused.
What's a good format?
Sources suggest, first, quick recap of the key rules and penalties. Second, discuss any incidents, near misses, or rule breaking from the past week. Not to blame, but to learn. How did it happen? How do we stop it happening again?
Learning from mistakes.
Yes. And third, always end on a positive. Highlight good practices, recognize people who followed procedures well, reinforce the right behaviors.
That positive reinforcement sounds smart. Keeps people engaged, not just lectured.
Exactly. It fosters that proactive mindset we talked about.
Okay, policy, meetings. What about digging a bit deeper into the training guidelines again? You mentioned accredited trainers.
Yes. Forklift training guidelines need to be robust. Trainers shouldn't just be the experienced guy. They need to be professionally accredited, certified instructors.
And the course itself
needs to be comprehensive. Theory, practical operation, specific skills like using the lift mechanism properly, and plenty of supervised practice. Then a formal assessment, a test to make sure they've actually absorbed it and can operate safely.
And you mentioned mentoring after.
Yes, post-qualification. That on-the-job monitoring by someone experienced is crucial. Until you're confident they can handle the specific challenges of your workplace safely. And don't forget, refresher training.
How often?
Every few years is generally recommended. Keeps skills sharp, updates people on any new rules or equipment, combats complacency. It's not a one-and-done thing.
Makes total sense. Skills fade. Things change. Continuous learning is key. Right. Let's tackle some common questions people might still have. Ready?
Fire away.
Okay. The big one. Do you really need a forklift license in the UK? We touched on this, but just to be crystal clear.
Okay, technically, no. There isn't an official government photo ID license, like for a car. But, and it's a huge but, employers have a legal duty under Older and Pure to ensure operators are properly trained and competent. That means certified training from an accredited body is effectively mandatory.
So no license, but mandatory proven training.
Exactly. And remember, if you drive it on a public road, you do need your standard car driving license.
Got it. Next, how often should a forklift be serviced?
Right. Two parts to this. Operators do their daily checks. If they find any fault, it needs immediate attention. Take it out of service. Get it fixed by a professional. If the daily checks show no problems, then you rely on the thorough examination, which is legally required, often annually or sometimes more frequently, depending on usage, carried out by a competent person. Plus, preventative maintenance servicing as per the manufacturer's recommendations, usually at least annually.
Daily checks, immediate repairs if needed, plus regular professional examination and servicing. Clear. Okay, seatbelts again. Do you have to wear a seatbelt on a forklift?
Legally, the employer has to ensure the forklift is used safely under PURE, and providing enforcing seatbelt use is a key part of that, especially since 2002, and it's absolutely mandatory if driving on the road. So for practical purposes and compliance, yes, wear the seatbelt.
Just wear it. Simple. Last one, what about safety glasses? Always needed.
Not automatically, no. It depends entirely on the workplace and the task. Is there dust? Risk of splashing chemicals? Flying and debris. If the workplace risk assessment identifies those hazards, then yes, safety glasses or other eye protection would be required PPE. But it's not a blanket rule for just sitting in the forklift cab in a clean environment.
Risk assessment is key there.
Always.
This has been incredibly thorough. It's clear that forklift safety isn't just one thing. It's this whole ecosystem of rules, practices, checks, and crucially, attitude.
Constant vigilance, really. From the top management setting the policy right down to the operator doing their daily checks.
So we've covered the legal framework, the essential practical tips, the importance of policy and training. It really is this constant interplay, isn't it, between the rules, the actions, and the ongoing learning.
It is. It's about embedding it, making it second nature, not just a checklist.
Which leads to a really interesting final thought, perhaps.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we know workplaces are under pressure. Efficiency, speed, getting things done. It's constant.
Mm-hmm. The reality.
So the big question is, how do we move beyond just, you know, ticking the safety boxes because we have to? How do we build a culture where every single safety step, even the ones that seem a bit inconvenient, is genuinely understood and valued? So it just becomes the natural, intuitive way to do things.
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? Shifting from compliance to true commitment, making safety instinctive.
A fantastic point to ponder. How do we make safety truly intuitive? Thank you so much for sharing all this insight today. It's been eye-opening.
My pleasure. It's a vital topic.
Absolutely. So to everyone listening, thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Stay curious, stay informed, and above all, please stay safe out there.